Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are in the Cafe Book Club. We are in Sensitivity is a New Strong by Anita Morjani. And this is a book that's been already rocking and rolling a few worlds, a few conversations. I'll go ahead and get my co-host, Miss Amy. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I got a little bit of a problem. My cape is stuck in a fan right now. I got to pull my super cape out of the fan.
Well,
but
if you watch The Incredibles, you would know no cape. No cape.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think I'd learn that.
Then we'll go ahead and get our and Miss Alana. Miss Alana, how are you tonight?
Alana Banana. I'm well, thank you. I'm excited to explore this next chapter, finding about blessings or curses.
I know, right?
Low,
and we're excited
because
last week we had a cliffhanger because some of us had taken the test. It's in chapter one, and Miss Alana has taken the test, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. So I think we'll jump into that a little bit later. So empathic, yeah, a blessing or a curse, and the mantra for this chapter is my sensitivity is my superpower. I love that. And I just wanted to read this first paragraph of stuff because it was just so good. It says, being an empath comes with many powerful gifts, but it can also be extremely painful. If you're an empath and don't realize it, as I didn't for much of my life, it can be debilitating. Even saying the word is bad. Okay.
Yeah, that's
we're feeling
hard.
That there's something
it's
wrong.
Hard to even say the word.
Exactly. We feel that there's something wrong with ourselves, that we're a failure, a loser, when we can't please everyone. And we don't have value ourselves enough to get paid for doing the work that we love. Even if you recognize that you're an empath, unless you know how to harness your intuitive, energetic abilities that can hold you back from fully realizing yourself because you are always seen as the other is more important. So what are your impressions of this right off the bat, Amy?
Well, for me personally, it's definitely been a lifelong path. You know, I think, you know, one of the keys, right, people say, oh, you're too sensitive. I'd have to say more than that, I think I got you're too nice. And I think that plays back to Alana's point last week, whoever's point it was, about codependence and
mm-hmm.
how that feeds into this. And mm-hmm. learning I had to be nice in order to make sure that I wasn't attacked. Definitely by my mother, that if I said my truth or what I saw, if it had any kind of conflict with what she wanted, how she wanted, when she wanted it, there was all hell to pay. And so that's kind of how mine went underground. So a lot of my life, especially my work life, has been about healing that so I can fully be the empath, the sensitive, whatever word you want to put to it. The creative, really, for me, I think.
And I really love how Anita talks about that, you know, there's always going to be this struggle of trying to fit into a world that isn't geared toward us. You know, she uses the idea of that, you know, with a sixth sense, like in the empathic, intuitive, that you're really trying to live in just this, like, living, you know, outside water or whatever. That's not the metaphor she used, but it's this whole way of, like, you know, you have to be a land mammal when you'd be better off being a mermaid. You know what I mean? I know you love
that.
I know you love that.
You know,
yeah.
I do. That's very nice.
Yeah,
very
you good. Know, when you think of Ariel and how she had to sacrifice and give up certain things. Actually, if you looked at Little Mermaid.
Well, she had to give up her voice.
Right.
And isn't that what a lot of us did? We gave up our voice in order to be safe or release the illusion of being safe because we never really were.
you know, that just makes me think about, you know, looking through some of these Disney stories, which have been, they go back to, you know, beyond Disney before, you know, they made them popular through animation.
Oh,
but just looking
right,
at some of
right.
these different stories and how they've, you know, like we've been talking about, you know, we just want to be recovering empaths here of how many times these those things have been reinforced in disbeliefs in society for culture when it's something that's basically kept the empath kind of stuck in this vortex circle of, you know, being codependent with just all the addictions and all the different things that get happening
mm-hmm.
in that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, later on in the chapter, Anita talks about that, about because of these different ways that we feel like we have to hold ourselves back, you know, alcoholism and drugs and all these other things can get into play.
Right.
Just so we can feel like we can function because we're shutting ourselves down so much. It's a matter of like, I need more things to buffer me because this is still feeling overwhelming.
Well, and Alana, is there anything that you want to say right now before there's something I want to bring up, but not until I see there's something that's coming to you?
No, I'm good. Go with the flow.
So on the page 33, where it, you know, talks about our blessing or gift includes the very sensitivity that causes us such discomfort, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's where a lot of the you know addictions come from. Is trying to hide that sensitivity. And Webhashi says this. She says, that sensitivity links us to the other side, but also gives us a keen intuition, natural healing abilities, and the ability to love easily and make others comfortable effortlessly. In addition, mm-hmm. empaths are often thoughtful, conscientious, caring, creative, and naturally great listeners. And if you're, that thing is so great, but you can really be taken advantage of in a world
mm-hmm.
that is looking for people to take advantage of. And so
mm-hmm.
I think that's where a lot of addictions, whatever, work, and you name it, you know, there's whatever. The addiction doesn't really matter. What the addiction does is to try to have you not feel those feelings of I have this these things and I know them, but how do I relate this to anybody and how do I use this? And a lot of times people were either taken advantage of or they were, you know, hurt because of it. How can you do that? How can you know that? How can that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then goes on to talk about, you know, she says, we're going to talk about these key downfalls. And, boy, any one of these could be a whole show.
Yeah,
these things that we're
absolutely.
Talking about. Yeah, yeah, because the first one's about aversion to criticism and the addiction for approval. And, boy, that's just so underlining for society. If you look at just the, you know, the internet culture and everything that's out there, it's basically in some ways it's just, you know.
Well, I think it's magnified
Yeah, magnifying is actually a word. I was just going to, let's talk about how the volume's been kicked up on that of just, you know, see me and I need approval and this is who I am. And then the other part of it is just that level of criticism, how people start getting these people commenting, you know, from their YouTubes and things like that. And they're just like, you know, please be kind. And I'm like, wow, you know, that we need even
or at least
ask
don't destroy me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a two-sided sword that's just so so delicately balanced with what's going on with everything. It's really, really very eye-opening, even though, like, it's like seeing something that you've known is there, but yet seeing in this way that it can be just so sad that it's such a, you know, predominant, you know, thing that's happening in the world, but yet it's something that just totally is just crying. I can see why, you know, Anita was called back from heaven. It's just like, there's things that you need to do here. We need to get this
changed.
Well,
I just want to make a point. Something, I was watching something this morning, and they were saying that there was this big, there was a very public figure that was big time attacked, and it appeared like it was, you know, hundreds of thousands of people making all these comments. When it turned out, once they got to the root of it, it was only 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
But 50 people that were really obnoxious and really loud. And so for me, I really do believe that people at their heart are good, And there are people out there that they, for whatever reason, you know, they'll hurt people or whatever, that they want to attack others so much. In the venues that we have available now, a few people can cause a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm. With that aspect of that, Anita says that, you know, we become a slave to approval, a slave to the person who stopped giving us the praise. We talk more about that throughout the book, but she says, know now that this book will help you to deal more effectively with criticism and focus on your own inner guidance systems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all these things are basically geared to just basically buffer you so you're not really hearing the messages of, you know, your sense of self and your sense of spirit and how to be able to be, you know, take those personal powers and be out, be, you know, a force for good in the world instead of have it be something that's succumbing you to things that, you know, not what you're wanting, but you're allowing to happen because you just don't know any better.
Well, and one thing they just talked about here, the fast-tracked doormathood, and what came to me just so strongly was we created that to be safe, or again, the illusion of being safe. And you know what? Now we're able to learn how do we have resilience, how do we empower ourselves so we can feel safe in a way that we're really in charge of it ourselves instead of hiding. And that's exciting to me, not only for ourselves, but people we mentor, people who watch us and follow us. And, of course, it's very important to me to get to people, all people that I can, but it's certainly as young as we can, teaching them to use space.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'd like to have Alana talk about that a little bit with her daughter.
Yeah.
Right, just about how teaching to help, but don't be a doormat.
And being safe in other ways than shutting down.
Right. Well, I don't think that my child ever really just shut down about stuff, you know.
Well, I think she had some help from a great mom.
Oh, thank you.
Exactly.
But like shutting down is not really an issue for them. They're more for them is not understanding the world and why the people who are doing the things that are making them sad or the decisions that are being made from people in power, they don't quite understand why they would make those decisions, but then also they don't understand why it's affecting them so, you know, why it upsets them so much. And so we have to like, so, but that's one thing that we've done is given them words, you know, it's giving them the vocabulary to express themselves is, I think, been key for us. And I've said that on here before, but like, so many people have talked to me, they say, oh, your child's so articulate. And I'm like, well, we try to give them all the words, you know, because they need all the words, you know. I mean, I read something a long time ago when my third child was really a baby. He didn't speak as much as my other children at first. My first two children were very talkative, and he wasn't as talkative, but he also had a super quick temper. So whenever, like, if he was done with food and he didn't want to eat anymore, he would just throw his plate, or he would just start throwing a fit and, like, throwing food, you know? And so I had to start teaching him sign language just so that he could communicate, because he's too young to talk. But so I had to teach him, you know, finished, all done, you know, more, please, you know, just different, you know, just basic communication so that he wouldn't get so frustrated trying to communicate what he needed, you know. And so, I mean, we didn't have to go full bore, you know. We just, you know, it was just a few words and just to help him with his language skills, you know, and to communicate. And so that's, I've always been sensitive to that children who cannot express themselves become frustrated and they become angry. And I mean, I'm sure we all do, right? We can't get that.
Yeah, exactly. We'd always be that place of like, you don't get me. I know how can I express myself? Yeah, for sure.
Well, I want to honor you for that, helping him find a way to express himself that a lot of people would never even adventure to go down that path. That's amazing.
Right.
Well, and
I think
the thing that's interesting is
called like baby sign or something.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting is probably the last, I don't know, I'm guessing 15, 16 years, that's really kind of the norm for a lot of kids is the first thing they learn is sign language. It isn't necessarily, verbal. It's learning sign, and that's something that, parents have really, embraced with their kids. Because I was talking to somebody the other day, and their kid just was just, going crazy with the sign language. But again, like that too is like, I've known kids too that, and I think part of that's because they're telepathic. They can sense and they can hear what's going on. So why would I talk? Mm-hmm. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Why are you making sounds when you could just think about it? Or you could just read. You can read mentally what's going on instead of having to, because it takes a lot of work to talk.
Oh yeah.
If you think about it, you've got to think about it, and then you've got to use your body and all this other stuff. And you could just go and you just think, just sit here and look at each other and talk,
Or just throw a plate.
Or whatever, throwing a plate sounds a lot more fun than trying to figure out, like, I'm done. All done now, thanks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, because I've noticed that with a couple kids that I know that I can, just by the way they would look at me, and I would, start communicating telepathically with them, I would think things, and they were responding to what I was thinking. So I know that they could hear me. Mm-hmm. It's just real interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But I think that this book too is like that. They're giving, she's giving you words. She's giving you one of the tools that she's giving you is the language to express your, to understand yourself as an empath. And so I think for me it's like, who knew I didn't even understand the word boundary when I first started going into counseling, I just knew that that everything was a bit of a mess and I needed some help,
And I think part of that too is learning the language to tell somebody whatever's going on is like, this is not okay for me. I'm not happy with this and this is not what I want, being able to say that. And like, unless you know that you can say that and that's a way of being able to, show a boundary, how would you know?
Exactly. Like just even, it was so empowering to even say the words, I'm angry, I am angry about this. And you just, people would say, what do you mean? Oh, you're angry. Oh, yeah, okay, well, why? Like it opens the conversation or, I feel very sad right now. Just identifying the emotions opens up the conversation, right?
And what does that really mean? And how is that really affecting
right.
you? Right?
Right.
And then
when
they talk this whole sensory overload, and I think we've got whole new ways of sensory overload now. And she talks about, I receive letters from people all the time who tell me they find it hard to deal with watching TV because of the violence or depressing subject matter, especially the news. And I know, especially where it really, really hit me was 9/11 and all that that was going on. And then I think I never really was able to fully really be with news after that. And so I still needed to understand what was happening in the world. But I started finding ways to get the information without having to watch a lot of news or read a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that was it. It's up to me to find ways that work for me. But one thing she talked about here, it's on page 40, that I thought was really interesting, said it goes without saying that in high-tech times of ours, sensory overload is just a click away. And she says, as we click away countless times a day, we internalize fears and anxieties provoked by the omnipresent source of the information. I thought, wow. Wow.
And, let's go back to when we actually got television and the way they started covering news. I mean, I want to go back to when Kennedy got assassinated.
Mm.
I mean, everybody got to see that.
Mm.
So these powerful images that started – influencing, fear and change in the way that, back in the day it would be like somebody would tell you a story about it, right? It'd be something, they were there and then they shared about it or whatever. And then when they get to the point where we're, you just click on this apparatus that basically can show you real time that there's things going on. And now we've got stuff where, stuff
and
being shown and people don't believe
so
it anymore.
Fast.
Yeah. He's like, I'm watching it real time, and people are telling me this is not happening. I'm like, I can't even trust myself. Is that what you're telling me?
Wow.
You know?
That's a really good point.
I know I'm looking at it, and they're telling me, no, that's false. That's false news. It's not true.
Wow.
So don't trust yourself and don't trust your sense of what's really happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's this just wild thing that's happening. And, you know, after this last show that we've done, I was thinking about it, and I got the message that, you know, being an empath is being a canary in the room. It's being a canary on the planet that can really just be in a place that just things that, you know, these things that are happening, you know, let's just, you know, take a step back here and just see what's really true. You know,
well,
there could be gas everywhere.
Canary,
we don't think, you know,
me,
you think yourself. Yeah.
Right. Well, when you said canary, it was like when they were down in the mines to see if there was gas, they had a canary, right? Is that where you were
exactly.
going?
Exactly. That's my point.
Okay, good. It's
that's
like, wow.
Point.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure we're, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're on the same wavelength. Wow.
Yeah.
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 You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And being able to be, you know, the warning of, like, this isn't – and if you probably go back in history to people who were empathic that basically, you know, got burned at the stake because people didn't like what they were saying, but it doesn't mean
right.
that it wasn't true. You know, they, you know, through history, all these things have been happening for people. Because, like, I heard a really wonderful talk one time by Marianne Williamson, and she talked about that whole time period when Kennedy got shot and then Martin Luther King
mm-hmm.
and all these major – people of change basically got silenced, and it really, that whole generation, what did they do? They basically stepped back and were afraid that they too were going to get shot.
Yeah,
we turned into disco and all this other stuff.
Right.
You know, we just turned our focus into something else to where, you know, we can't go there. We can't have that change. And now we're back at it again.
It's too much.
Because
it's
it was about
deep.
Civil rights
handle,
and all these other things. And now we're
mm-hmm.
full circle again about having all these things to come back up again, and basically it's like time to clean house. What are we doing? How are we doing it? You know. So being empathic is just, you know, it's been one of those things where through history hasn't you know been popular, because you know you're in the canary in the mine, and
oh,
letting
know,
people know that
like,
you know
yeah,
we may not be safe here.
Yeah, start with something else. You know, in emotional intelligence, they also talk about mirroring neurons, mirroring, and that when we see something, our brain it takes us immediately to empath, really, and feeling what they're feeling. That's why when they want you to donate, they show the pictures of the kids and the, you know, the animals
mm-hmm.
and that, and you're just immediately in that space. And so there's something, you know, with the brain and the mirroring neuron that's kind of coming to me too, right? That it's like,
mm-hmm.
That it's activating that. And so it's like,
mm-hmm.
how do we find ways to certainly be empathetic? Because I think that's important without it shutting us down. Like you're saying, it's like, oh no, I can't. So I think on the beauty of the sensitivity that, so I guess it's the third paragraph. Did you want to read that, Robin?
What page are we on? I don't know where you are right now.
Page 43, the beauty of your sensitivity. Yeah, it's when you give your power to the outside world.
42? 43. It says when you give your power to the outside world that you lose your connection to your inner self of knowing, and your life starts spiraling downward. This
let's take a breath on that.
Yeah.
Right?
This,
wow.
Right. The pain of this is dichotomy, our connection to the higher calling, our higher self, and our tendency to give our power away to those outside of ourselves can cause empaths to turn themselves inside out to avoid any criticism, gain approval. We do it. We'll do anything to ease the suffering. And this deep awareness of calling and the sequential need to subvert ourselves to fit into the five sensory world can lead to depression, suicidal tendencies, drug dependency as a path to escape that kind of internal pain. And who feels more internal pain than anyone? It's an empath. Yeah,
this
powerful.
Paragraph is, I've been having this conversation with a whole lot of people in the last year, that this paragraph totally talks to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that this shutting down and what it's doing to your knowing and to your, you know, living your calling and being who you came here to be, and us looking at recovery in all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just like everything else. A lot of these systems propagate the whole thing that it, you know, it's something that, you know, doesn't want to change because it wants to have all those things being supported that are, you know, not in our best interest, for sure. So, you know, that's one reason I've been talking to Amy that, you know, we just need to basically have a recovery for empaths.
Yeah. I think,
you
know,
just like, you know,
it
would have it for addiction
or
whatever.
It codependent.
It's like, to me,
codependent, yeah, no more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, once the empaths are, you know, basically start singing and realize what's going on in the world and just realizing that, you know, I can express what I'm sensing and feeling. And, you know, you're still going to make your choices. But let me tell you what I sense and know. You know, the world, you know, the world can't help but change. And that's exciting.
So kind of looking at Alana, right before the meditation, it talks about Michelangelo and bringing out the angel and the stone. You know, in a way, I kind of feel like that's what this whole work is about, is who am I, and uncovering the empath, or whatever word you want to put. Was there anything about that or anything prior that's coming to you?
Well, I think for me, you know, of course, I always relate to, you know, being an art history major in college, you know,
mm-hmm.
I always relate to
mm-hmm.
an art metaphor.
Uh-huh. But, I felt you.
So, you know, I just what I liked about this, I liked that that she does talk about the pain that empaths have, you know, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it seems like recently so many people have, you know, there's a, you know, I mean, I've just seen it in circles, you know, in healing circles and in, you know, oh, I'm an empath, and they wear it like a ribbon on their, you know, on their shoulder, you know, and it's like,
mm-hmm.
I get it. You know, yes, you are, but also that comes with a lot of baggage. And I think that she's being honest about the baggage that comes with it. And so, like, I still am looking forward to, like, I appreciated her calling, you know, calling these things layers, you know, that calling it basically
mm-hmm.
our coping mechanisms layers, you know. I felt that was very interesting that she's basically saying, stay soft. Right? Stay soft. Don't get hard. It's okay to feel these things, but we're going to find ways to make it a healthy way to feel
mm-hmm.
these things.
Right? Amen.
And so
it feels that way.
It's a hopeful message.
Mm-hmm. Very helpful. Yeah.
But honoring the pain that does come with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When you know, when
yeah.
you love, you know, you have grief. When you care, you
mm-hmm.
get hurt.
Mm-hmm. So with every episode, we want to make sure that we do a sound bite that would be just the meditation for embracing our gifts. So I'd love for Amy to go ahead and read
mm-hmm.
that. And we're encouraging, if you really feel and have the book and you can record it with your own voice, that's something that can be very, very powerful to be putting that with you. So we're going to go ahead and have Amy, you know, bring that on so we can have it as part of the show.
All right. So we're going to be talking about embracing your gifts. And so let's take a nice deep breath in. Hold it a little bit. And out. I see my sensitivity as my strength and my superpower. It's part of who I am. I love and accept myself for who I am. I no longer need anyone else's approval to accept me or my sensitive nature. I no longer forsake myself nor beat myself up for being a sensitive soul. My sensitivity serves a purpose. My soul chose me to experience this for a reason. Sensitivity is a rare gem, and I feel privileged to have it. Breathe in. Honoring your gifts. Breathe out the need to hide from them. and onward we go.
So beautiful. Thank you, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
So the good news is moving into part two, which is your relationship with yourself in this chapter three, is how to live life more optimally as an empath. And I love her mantra. I am like water, both gentle and strong. I love that.
Yeah, and water always finds its way, right? It always finds its way.
And it's gentle and strong, for sure. Encourage everybody to go over to the Transformation Cafe community over on our Facebook page. Love to hear any comments, and how this is really affecting you, and just awarenesses that maybe you didn't have. Anything you feel comfortable sharing, we really appreciate those messages, and just any ideas for things that are just really helping you to, you know, feel strong and gentle at the same time. I think that's really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So we look forward to our next show, and thank you. Thank you, ladies. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
All right.
You.
We'll
Love
see
you
next time here at the
Love
cafe.
You.
Love you, too.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.